prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The Truth Revolution.
Welcome to Truth Revolution. This is where faith and reason meet. Pastor Dave, that's Pastor Jeff.
Hey.
And we are from Revolution Church here in Salina, Kansas.
We believe that God cares more about the inside of a person than the outside.
Amen.
So we really don't care what you look like or what you wear or things like that. We're interested in you coming to get to know God along with us. That's that's what we're interested in. We believe Jesus is all about mercy and forgiveness and love no matter what you've done.
Right.
Because, Dave, you've done some stupid stuff.
I have. Hey, so have you.
Oh, dang it. You're right.
We all have.
This is reality. We've all done stupid stuff. We've all sinned. And let's just, if you're listening to the radio right now, just give a little head nod. Yeah. Be like, yeah, I've done stuff that I probably shouldn't have done. And this is the reality. And the reality is God offers us forgiveness. There's no need to be scared about coming to God. We're just sometimes so scared to step into the light and be like, okay, here's what I've done,
there's
God.
There's great reason to be excited about stepping into the light.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're going to talk about something very important today. We're going to be talking about the story of reality. This is actually a new book, just came out last month. Mm-hmm. Dave, who's our guest today?
Greg Kukul. He's a Christian apologist, radio talk show host, author, and speaker. He has an MA in philosophy of religion and ethics from Talbot School of Theology and an MA in Christian apologetics from Simon Greenleaf School of Law. He is the founder of Stand to Reason, which is an organization dedicated to training Christians.
Love it.
How to defend their faith with knowledge, wisdom, and character. You can find them at str.org. And he's been on Truth Revolution a few times, and he's here again, and he's talking about his latest book, which is The Story of Reality.
Greg, welcome to the show again.
Hey, boys. So good to be with you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, always love having you. Always love having you.
Thank you.
And hey, I saw earlier today you were actually interviewing a guy from Reasons to Believe.
That's right.
And he was just with us a couple weeks ago talking about his new book. Ken Samples.
So, that's great.
Hey, it's great the circles we hang out in.
It is, man. Like Ken Samples and Greg Kukul. Like, this is just, anyway, we got geniuses all over the place.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But hey, so you written this new book, and you are an apologist. You like to give good reasons to believe.
That's right.
Why did you write this book? What is it about?
Well, I have been for a long time convinced that the smart money is on Jesus of Nazareth. Mm-hmm. I started out thinking that I was too smart to be a Christian and that ironically have given my life for a defense of the Christian faith, which shows that God's got a sense of humor, you know?
Yeah, really.
And as I look at the details and the facts and the nature of the world, and I look at the other options that are available to us, it just strikes me that the Christian view of reality is the best explanation for the way things are. Doesn't mean there aren't questions. There's always going to be questions with every view that you take. There's going to be challenges about it. There's going to be outliers, but nothing comes close to Christianity in terms of being reasonable, fitting the world the way we actually experience it, and actually fitting together in a coherent account of reality itself. And this is one reason that I wrote the book, The Story of Reality. I called it that. The story isn't new. I mean, the story has been around for a couple thousand years. But, you know, a lot of Christians and non-Christians, frankly, have never seen the big picture. They might have bits and pieces of the story, but they've not put it together in a coherent whole. And so what I'm trying to do is to give the big picture. But I didn't want to write a theology book. You know, I didn't want to write a systematic theology. There's a lot of good ones like that. I wanted to rather to write in a voice that was almost a storytelling voice. I wanted to have a conversation with I'm talking with the reader. I'm not just throwing information out like most books do, which is fine. Mm. But I wanted to talk with the reader. And this is the style that Chesterton has and Lewis has and Tolkien has, at least in The Hobbit, and John MacDonald before Lewis. So this is a style that might be called fairy tale in terms of its voice. But of course, I don't mean to be telling a fairy tale.
Right.
It's the story of the way things really are. So here is an attempt, and from what I could tell, it's been pretty well received. It's an attempt to take the big picture of Christianity and lay it out in a doctrinally sound way, but in language people can understand, in a conversational tone that's really pretty friendly, I think. It's not condescending to people who don't share my view. It's not overly triumphal. Mm. And it's like I'm trying to put my arm around whoever it is I'm talking to. Christian or non-Christian, right, and kind of walk them through the story, and then at the end say, well, what do you think about what you just heard? That kind of thing.
So a big thinker or someone who's kind of new to these ideas of what is reality, what is the Christian theology, both of them could pick up information from this book. And
oh, absolutely. There's no question. My 9-year-old was reading it the other day. I actually dedicated the book to her, so it gives her a little motivation, you know, to read it. But she's reading, she was on page 36, which is, you know, that's a good way through the book. And I said, are you enjoying it? Yeah, you know.
Okay.
Do you understand it? Well, yeah, you know.
Now, let's be honest. Are you paying her to read it, Greg? Are you paying?
No, she got her payoff by getting the book dedicated to her. But I think that's on the one side of accessibility. But, you know, I've had theologians that have come through. And, I mean, Michael Horton, for example, the Reformed theologian, weighed in on this. J.P. Moreland has weighed in on this. Gary Habermas has weighed in. And I've got lots of endorsements from people that go thick into the details. So I've been very careful to make sure that I've gotten the central doctrines accurate. So there's depth there. But as Nancy Piercy says in her introduction, she says, this is a kind of an easy read, but don't be deceived by the ease of the flow, because there's richness in there and there's depth in there. So my commitment to the reader is to try to throw the ball so that they could catch it. And even when we're dealing with challenging issues, and we've been together before, you know, this is kind of a general approach that I take to communicating truth, whether it's to Christians or to non-Christians.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if you're a listener here, you heard the name Moreland, you heard the name Habermas, they've been on the show before. Great guys. So if they're recommending the book, forget Dave and I, all right? But in the story of reality, you actually break the Christian story down into, is it 5 elements? And what are those elements and why are they important?
Well, part of what I wanted to accomplish is I wanted to, and for 15 years, I've been kind of working on this idea, teaching on it and changing it and adjusting it. So this is a long project that's finally come to fruition. My goal initially was to try to lay out an accounting of Christianity that included all the basics. And a lot of times when you read about what are the basic doctrines of Christianity, well, you see the deity of Christ and the Trinity and the blood atonement and these kind of theologically weighty kind of concerns with all the big theological names. But nobody ever put in there. I think God's kind of an important part. It's presumed, but it's not stated, you know. And there's certain things about being human that are important, that that we are beautiful and unique, but we're also broken, you know. I mean, these are important parts. So as I started putting the pieces together, I realized that I could probably capture all of the real core essentials with 5 words. And we got 5 fingers, you know, so it's kind of convenient. It's a way of remembering. And our story starts with God, and he made everything, and it all belongs to him. And he made the next most important creature in creation, which is man.
Yeah.
And he made man to be in friendship with him, but man got himself in a heap of trouble. And so God decided to initiate a rescue operation. And notice in our story, God rescues man. Man does not rescue himself. This is very important. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We just talked about that on Sunday.
Yeah. And his rescue operation is to become a man himself in the person of Jesus. And what Jesus does in his life and in his death on a cross determines what happens to everybody in the final resurrection. So there's my 5 words: God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection. Those are the central things. There are critical things about every one of those areas that you have to affirm if you want to count yourself a Christian. If you leave any out, you got some other religion. Okay?
Yeah.
But it covers all the essentials as far as I can tell. But I also noticed something else about it, fellas. I noticed that not only do you have the foundational concepts of Christianity, you could call them systematic theology if you want, but you also had the most important things in the order they took place. There's a story here. And if you think about stories, all stories have four parts, essentially. They have a beginning, which lays the foundation, who the players are, what kind of world are you in. Mm-hmm. They have something goes wrong, so you got conflict. You know, oh, whoops. And that's usually only the story. And you know, the rest of the story is all about solving the conflict.
Right.
That's yeah. conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you got a little at the end where it all kind of comes together and they all live happily ever after. You know, and there's a restoration of sorts there. So that's the way all stories work. But you've got that same kind of thing with our story. You've got God at the beginning. You've got man and then a problem, a conflict. You got God solving the problem with the rescue operation of Jesus at the cross. And then you have the final restoration at the final resurrection. You've got a beginning. You've got an end. And you've got all the important details in between, which is why I chose the subtitle for the book that I did. The subtitle of the story of reality is How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between.
Right. Awesome. Now, so then that kind of begs the question, why is the Christian story any different? Because don't all religions, or at least some people would argue, I mean, don't all religions kind of follow the same pattern? You know, God or some sort of deity, and then, you know, mankind screwed it up, and then they have some sort of redemptive way to take care of the problem. And is the Christian story different?
Well, you're on to something, Jeff, and that is a structure of worldviews. They all start not necessarily with God, because Buddhism is a non-theistic religion, for example. That is, God doesn't play a significant role in their enterprise. You can believe in God or not. It doesn't change the religion, okay? And animism doesn't have a God in it. It's got spirits and stuff like that. But you do have a pattern, and the pattern is creation, fall, redemption, restoration. And by the way, those are pretty much synonymous with the story parts, beginning, conflict, resolution, and ending. So what you have then, if you're going to offer a picture of reality, which every worldview and every religion means to do, they're telling you how the world really is. A couple of things are obvious right from the beginning. First of all, they can't all be right.
Yeah.
They give different accounts of fundamental reality, how things began, what the problem is, how to solve the problem, and how it all gets worked out. Okay? They can't all be right. I was on a plane once and talking to a fellow about this, and the guy said, you know, you must be one of those people who thinks 90% of the people in the world are wrong about religion, you know? And then the word bigot kind of came up in the vocabulary there, and I said, well, you know, I am one of those guys, but that's not bigotry. It's just simple math, you know? In the sense that these religious views of the world compete with each other, they contradict with each other, they can't all be true. And they can all be false. And then maybe it turns out that mine is false. I mean, I'm open for discussion on that one. Yeah. But they simply can't be true. And this is politically incorrect to say this nowadays, but like I said, it's just simple math. And this is an idea developed in the book, The Story of Reality. Mm-hmm. So I want people to understand that what we are offering is really the same thing anybody else means to be offering, but is deeply misunderstood by people in a very relativistic culture. Mm. We are giving our account of the way we think reality actually is structured. Now, we need to defend that. It's not enough to just claim it. We want to show you why there's good reason to take seriously about our claim, but we don't want anybody to be mistaken about the kind of claim we're making. This story doesn't start out once upon a time. Mm. This story starts out in history, in the world, for a reason, because it means to tell us what the world is actually like.
That's great. I always find it interesting when people say, no, all worldviews are valid.
Right.
Because what they're actually doing is saying that their worldview, that other worldviews are valid, is the right way to see it.
Right.
And if you don't think, yeah, I mean, they're doing the exact same thing, except even worse. We're coming up to a break here. We're going to come back on the other side of the show, and we're going to get into some of the details about the book, other stories about the origin of the universe, the devil. We're going to talk about why Jesus actually had to take on a human body, mm-hmm. things like that. We're going to do Bible contradiction like normal. If you listen on the radio, you got to get it to the podcast, because we're going to do extra stuff at the end of this show.
Right.
And you're going to miss it if you're only listening on the radio.
TruthRevolution.tv. Past shows and little short clips. You can find it all right there.
Yeah, truthrevolution.tv is the site. And of course, Stand to Reason is where Greg is from. You want to get out there and we're going to link to you. At Revolution, we love other churches here in town. For instance, we love New Community.
Hi, I'm Mike Willick, pastor at New Community. We're the church that loves like Jesus and lives like Jesus.
And what does that mean?
Well, we strive to love people unconditionally like Jesus did and walk in the shoes and represent Jesus wherever we go.
Where are you located?
We're located at 530 East Cloud Street.
And where can they find more information?
You can go to our website at newcommunitycc.org or on Facebook. Our service times are at 9 and 1045.
Thanks, Mike.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Is there grace in the Old Testament, or is it something new in the New Testament after Jesus?
Virtually every story in the Old Testament is proof of grace, actually.
The theological phrase is salvation history, a recounting of the many times God had mercy on Israel.
It's a very clear pattern that we see over and over and over.
And it goes something like this.
Step one, Israel forsakes God and breaks a command, especially worshiping other gods and rejecting the real God.
Step two, God gives Israel over to nations to harm it, take them captive, or ruin them.
Step three, Israel cries out to God, Yahweh, for deliverance from their situation. They ask for mercy.
Step four, God gives them mercy and delivers Israel from their enemies.
We see this over and over. Mercy's not new when Jesus comes. In fact, the whole point of the Old Testament laws was to help everyone understand
you are not perfect. You need God's mercy.
So, mercy in the Old Testament? Absolutely.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Do you love Truth Revolution?
Of course they do, Dave.
Well, if you do, or...
Or if you appreciate the fact that thousands of people are being taught that Christianity is compatible with science and logic.
Or if you simply love the fact that we hear from people often who say, this show changed my life, I love Jesus.
Then consider a donation.
You can visit TruthRevolution.tv or Revolution Church and donate.
We don't get paid from this show.
But it's our goal to give, give truth, give knowledge, give encouragement.
And your giving keeps all of our giving going. Do you know, or are you, a woman between 18 and 22 aging out of foster care or without a place to live?
If your goal is to continue your education, whether it's a college degree or GED, the Hope House may be the place for you.
Located in Salina, Kansas, Hope House is a beautiful home, providing not only a place to live, but a place to grow.
As a program of the Ashby House, Hope House provides dedicated volunteers and staff members who are there to help you accomplish your goals.
If this sounds like it might be a place for you or someone you know, please visit HopeHouseKS.org.
That's HopeHouseKS.org. Hey, Pastor Jeff, do we allow messed up people at Revolution Church?
Bro, sometimes my life is messy. I'm a human being. I've done wrong, but we believe in forgiveness from Jesus. It's powerful. When I sin,
I forgive you. And when I do something dumb,
I forgive you and help you back on track with God. Revolution Church, currently accepting messed up people.
Sundays at 10 a.m., 11:30 a.m., and 5 p.m.
Online at revo.church. We'd love to have you.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back talking to Greg Kokel today about his new book, The Story of Reality. You can find it online at thestoryofreality.com.
Yes, thestoryofreality.com, not thestoryofsorryreality.com.
Yes, you are so correct, Jeff.
Just wanted to clarify that. But although that could probably be an alternative title until the resurrection for all of us occurs.
Yeah.
So anyway, thestoryofreality.com is his book. His organization, Stand to Reason, STR.org. Greg, we were talking about how Christianity is different than other religions and other stories and other presentations of reality.
Right.
Do you find that Christianity has a view of reality as a framework that's different than a lot of other worldviews? I mean, in some ways we're similar to probably Islam, mm-hmm. In the way we view reality, but we're very different than a lot of other religions. How would you phrase
well,
that?
Well, we are different. All views of reality follow a certain pattern: creation, fall, redemption, restoration, because they're trying to explain the world, mm-hmm. and you got to understand ultimate reality, what went wrong, because everybody knows something's wrong, okay, and then how to fix it and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there are some worldviews that are more different from our story than others. So the classical monotheistic religions of the world, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, are going to be similar in the way we start, and in some ways, maybe an assessment of the problem.
Hmm.
I actually don't know how much Islam develops the idea of the fall of man. I don't know enough about their theology, but we share a testament, of course, with Jews. And so for those Jewish religious people who recognize the legitimacy of the Hebrew scriptures, well, then we all have the same starting point. We all have the same understanding of human beings. Human beings are special. They're made in the image of God, but they're terribly broken. Mm. And in their brokenness, they're not just broken like a machine is broken and need to be fixed. They are morally broken. They have rebelled against their sovereign, and they're guilty. And this changes things considerably, okay? And so it sets up a different kind of situation. Now, the other worldviews, they start in very, very different places. And so, consequently, they are going to answer the other questions very differently. And one of the things this underscores, and we've already talked about it, but I want to say it again, it cannot be the case that all worldviews are basically equal accurate. I mean, if God exists, he's either personal or not personal. If he's not personal, then the Vedantic Hindus are right on that, and the Jews and the Christians and Muslims are wrong on a really important detail.
Yes.
If he is personal, then the Jews and Christians and Muslims are right, the Vedantic Hindus are wrong, but they cannot be basically the same. A person who says that religions are all basically the same, when I hear that, I know I'm talking to somebody who doesn't know much about different religions.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you finding see the common denominator isn't going to help anyway, because it's the differences that matter, not the similarities.
Right. That's exactly right. When you see people with a coexist bumper sticker, you know, if all they mean is, hey, you know what, we can survive without hating each other.
Right.
Then, okay, I get that. But if what they're trying to imply is that we can all coexist at the same time, all of our truths are equally valid, that's actually an invalid statement.
Right.
It's not a logical statement.
In fact, Jeff, you pointed this out a few moments ago, but this is actually, it turns out to be contradictory, because a coexist, what they mean is that we all should say that everybody's fine, like they believe, and that's not what the other religions believe. So that sentiment really is, you guys are all wrong in your religious views, and I'm right in my universalistic view, and you ought to adopt my view.
Exactly.
So much for coexisting, you know?
Yeah. We should coexist, and if you don't agree with me, you're wrong, right?
That's right.
You know, let's get back to a couple specifics on the book here. In the book, you talk a little bit, it gets around the topic of the devil. I mean, what role has the devil played, continues to play in the story? I mean, some people see the Christian idea of a devil as idiotic,
arcane,
old school.
Yeah.
Okay, two thoughts here. One thought is, what you cannot do, and this happens a lot, is you cannot judge one worldview from within, being inside of another worldview.
Oh, that's so good.
Okay, and I'll explain what I mean. It's appropriate to judge it from the world, that I'm in reality and your worldview does not account for something that seems to be real to everybody. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a problem. That means your view doesn't correspond or tie up with the real world, which means it's not true. I mean, that's what the basic concept of truth is, that ties up. But you can't go into another worldview. Let's say you're an atheist. Okay, I understand that. That's another picture of reality, has certain rules. You can't stand inside of that and say, we don't believe in talking snakes, therefore your worldview is wrong.
That's right.
Okay. Well, there would be no talking snakes if the world was the way you describe it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's at issue is whether your description of the world is correct or our description of the world is. So if you disqualify our view by your view, that's circular reasoning.
Absolutely.
Okay? So all we're asking is that you at least consider our worldview on its own terms. Now think about it. Our story starts, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So you've got an invisible person, personal being, who makes everything else. That means that there are two kinds of things in our world. There are invisible things and there are visible things. These are entirely at home in our worldview, okay?
Right.
Nothing odd about that.
Yeah.
Secondly, there are supernatural powers. You could even use the word magical if you'd like. This is a magical world, okay? I'm not thinking of it as a pejorative here. I'm just saying,
yeah.
Wow, to an atheist, this would sound like magic. Okay?
Fantastic, yeah.
And this is a magical world. There are supernatural things that happen in our world. So the idea of a snake talking is completely consistent with the kind of world that the Christians claim we're in. Now, Now, validating that claim is another issue. But if we can give reasons that this is really the way the world is, and we can, then we ought to take seriously, or let's put it this way, we ought not simply dismiss things like some supernatural powerful being using an animal to communicate through.
Right.
All right? So there you go. What about that supernatural being?
Yeah.
Did you want to jump in?
No, I was just going to say, yeah, there's a major difference between defeaters and head scratchers, as we might call them, you know.
Oh, that's a great point.
So,
that's a great point. You cannot defeat one worldview from inside another worldview.
Mm-hmm.
These are the differences of what make them different worldviews.
Exactly.
Okay. You can only defeat it from inside of the real world and point at ways that things don't match up. Which I think is a problem for atheism, and maybe we'll get that to it because it doesn't match up with the world.
Mm.
But I'll get to that in a moment. The devil. I know people are dismissive of the devil. They just think this is crazy. But I want to tell you something. Our story does not hold together without the devil, because our story is about a massive battle that is being waged in the invisible world. And we see that right from the beginning, and we see it played out in through the story, and most powerfully when Jesus of Nazareth shows up on the scene,
mm-hmm.
you get visibility of these other elements. And the devil is the captain of the opposing army. We're not the captains. We're the
yes.
goofballs caught in the middle, kind of, you know? And this is why we're warned not to just look around at flesh and blood, the natural stuff, and think that this is all there is to it. There's a lot going on in the supernatural realm, mm. and the story gives us lots of insight on it. And this is why I take the account of the devil seriously, because it's a critical part of how the story flows.
That's awesome.
And if he's not real, then the story simply will not hold together.
That's right. The whole concept of sin and temptation, and why Adam and Eve, why mankind's fallen, all of that begins to fall apart. Hey, we're going to jump out. We're going to do a Bible contradiction, and then come right back to this.
Bible contradiction.
All right, today's Bible contradiction brought to you by BibViz.com.
Oh, yeah.
I like that one. Yeah, it's going to be a three-parter here.
Okay.
Romans 10:13, for whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Good news. Okay. Matthew 7:21, not everyone that saith to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doth the will of my Father which is in heaven.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. So totally contradicting there, but there's another one in there.
Uh-oh.
Jeremiah 14:12, when they fast, I will not hear their cry, and when they offer burnt offerings and an oblation, I will not accept them, but I will consume them with the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence.
Okay, I'm going to answer this. I'll give Greg a chance to jump in and if he wants to say anything, but you know, we use a cracked acronym,
mm-hmm.
C-R-A-C-K-E-D. This is how we interpret the Bible. That's how we solve contradictions. That first verse is saying, whoever calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. These other two seem to be saying that's not true.
Right.
There's people who are calling on the name of the Lord, but they're not saved. Well, the first, we're going to use our C, and we're going to use the A. Right? The first C stands for?
Context.
Very good. Context, right? So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to read these verses in context, and we find out that Matthew chapter 7 is talking about primarily false prophets.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about, hey, these people are going to prophesy, they're lying, they're not real prophets, and they're going to seem to do miracles, these things. And so these are people who didn't really love and follow Jesus, but they said Lord, even though they didn't love
him.
The context of Jeremiah 14 is, guess what? False prophets.
Oh.
People who are, again, saying things that aren't true, talking the name of the Lord. Okay, and by the way, Jeremiah 14, when you read it, this isn't talking about salvation. It's only talking about a temporary earthly punishment. So we got those contexts in our brain. Now let's go to the author's intention, okay, the A. Because whenever someone says something, whenever someone's written, you have to just not ask, well, what do I think this sentence means? But what was being communicated when they said this? And when Paul, who wrote Romans, said, whoever calls in the name of the Lord will be saved, he was not trying to say it's a script. And all you have to do is say, Lord, save me, and then you'll be saved. Right? This is not a script. He's not saying, technically, even if your heart isn't in it and you don't love God, you're fine as long as you say, God, help me.
Right. It's the concept of calling on the Lord.
It's a concept of what does it mean to call on the Lord?
Right.
It means you follow after Jesus. It means you love him. All these things. And so these people, Matthew 7 and Jeremiah 14, aren't truly calling on the Lord.
Right.
They're just using his name, not actually meaning come save me. And in Jeremiah 14 specifically, they can still be saved eternally. they're just getting a temporary punishment, right, which is not what Romans was talking about either. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to do the rest of the podcast, give Greg a chance to answer that Bible contradiction. TruthRevolution.tv, and you got to get out, check his book out, thestoryofreality.com, or you can get it at TruthRevolution.tv. We're going to link to it.
Truth Revolution.
And we're online talking on the podcast with Greg Kokel about his new book, The Story of Reality.
That's right. And we're finishing this Bible contradiction here. I mean, the idea that you can take Romans 10 and make it mean calling on the name of the Lord just means anyone who says, okay, God, help me out, is going to be fine.
Right.
That is not what the author was intending to communicate in any way, shape, or fashion. Greg, is there anything you want to add to this contradiction or other comments?
Well, that was a great... I was going to close in prayer, brother, man. That was a good answer. Really was. But, yeah, words are not magic. You can't just say a line like, Jesus is Lord, you know, and that creates some kind of magical thing, or Lord save me, or however people do it. It's an attitude of the heart that's expressing the words. If the heart isn't right, then the words mean nothing. Yeah. And what happens is the behaviors that follow the words indicate where the heart is actually at.
Mm, that is so good. You know, actually, this leads me back to your book. In page 139, you actually write, faith does not save. So, I mean, this actually looks really similar to this contradiction we're looking at. What do you mean by that? What actually saves us from our sins?
Well, just think about it. Do you think that the terrorists who flew the planes into the Twin Towers had faith?
Ooh, definitely had faith.
Yeah, well, they had more faith than I do.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look what they put on the line for their own belief, all right? Now, on my take... Even though their faith was stronger than mine, that isn't going to do them any good with God. It isn't the strength of the faith. It is who you put your faith
Amen.
In. Ooh. So we are not, strictly speaking, saved by faith. We are saved by grace through faith. And Jesus is the object and the source of the grace that rescues us. So does the airplane take me to France? I can get on the airplane and express all of my trust. But if nobody's flying the plane, I'm going nowhere.
Wrong. Yeah. That's not right.
So you got to have a pilot that's capable. You got to have a plane that's capable. It is not our act of trust in whatever that makes the difference. It is the... Who or what we're putting our trust in. Jesus saves. All Amen. Right. That's the point. And I'll say, you know, faith doesn't save. I play a trick on Christians. I ask them, does faith save me? Yeah. I said, wait a minute. Let's think a little bit more about that. Because if you think that way and you're not careful about how you understand it, you end up into trouble.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make this crystal clear. Nothing about the strength of your faith is going to rescue you. Mm-hmm. You know, you can venture out onto a lake in the winter, you know, and you could be really, really scared that you might fall in. But if you got thick ice, doesn't matter how scared you are, what little faith you have to venture out, you're going out there, thick ice is going to hold you. Or you can dance out on that ice with all the faith you could possibly muster and be really thrilled, but if it's thin ice, you're going to get wet.
Boom, exactly. Amen. You know, we were just looking at Philippians 1:6, and that basically teaches us that it is God who causes, God who carries, and God who completes our faith. Right. I mean, he's the one who gets this job done, and it's just relying on him. It's actually a funny thing. And of course, faith is important. We exercise our free will by accepting the gift that God offers us or rejecting it. But the only time in Scripture that the phrase faith alone actually appears is in the book of James, where it says, don't you know that faith alone doesn't save you? Where it says,
well, see, what I want to do on that James passage is think, and this is going back to your context and author kind of thing. I think what James is saying is, and it goes actually back to your verse that you were talking about, that a mere expression of faith itself is not going to save. Mm. The demons also believe, all right?
Yes.
He says, can that kind of faith save you? And so the question isn't whether faith saves, it's the kind of faith you're expressing. If it's just a lot of noise, or whether it's a deep faith, a true faith, a genuine trust in Christ that results in a transformed life that you can see the results of. Show me your faith without your works. I'll show you my faith by my works.
Right. Exactly like your plane analogy. I mean, it's not your faith that flies the plane. I mean, it's the pilot. It's all the pilot. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you actually have to exercise your faith and get on the plane.
Right. There you go.
It's not enough just to say that the plane will work, you know. So now let's move that faith discussion along a little bit into the resurrection of Jesus.
Right.
You talk about this in your book and how we can have faith that it actually happened. What are some of those elements?
Well, so here's where I am very, very careful how I use the word faith, because as you notice, the chapter where I talk about faith, I actually use the word trust, because I think the word faith is corrupted in English language, at least, for any effective use. Yeah. The minute you say the word faith, people are saying, your mere belief, your leap of faith, your blind faith. And I say, okay, forget about it. That's not what the New Testament is talking about. So when I have faith in the resurrection, what I mean is, I think the resurrection actually happened. Yes. And I have reason to believe that the resurrection happened in time space history, and because of that, I can put my trust in it, and I am rescued in part because of that resurrection of Jesus 3 days after he was crucified. And so maybe the question then is, well, what makes you think that that's the case? And the chapter I deal with that is called Four Facts. And I do a very, very simple analysis. Gary Habermas has done this in spades. He's got a whole book about it. But I just sum up the idea. That is that there are four basic facts that all historians of this period agree to that are not controversial. That is, there's nothing supernatural about Jesus was crucified. He was dead. Okay, that's one. Secondly, buried in a tomb. Okay, and that tomb was empty.
Empty.
All right. That's, well, okay, Jesus is dead and buried, let's put it that way. Then the tomb is empty, so that's two, okay? And then there were people who said they saw him alive afterwards. That's three.
That's three.
Okay. And four, skeptics like James and even persecutors of Christians like
Paul
of Tarsus were radically converted because they said they saw him too, and both died a martyr's death. Okay, those are facts of history, and virtually every historian acknowledges those four facts.
Yep.
Here's our question. By the way, nothing supernatural about any of them. Here's our question. What best explains all of those agreed upon facts of history? Doesn't matter whether they're secular, atheist, Christian, regardless, these are the things everybody acknowledged the evidence supports. Well, it's going to turn out that none of the naturalistic explanations are going to be adequate to explain those facts. That the best explanation by far, and we don't have time to get into all the details, but just to sum, the best explanation by far, the thing that has the most explanatory power is that the disciples were right when they claimed he who is dead is now risen. That explains the dead body, the empty tomb, the appearances to the disciples in many times, individually and in groups, in many different places. They're having meals together. You know, it isn't just a fleeting chimera or chimera. You know, and then you've got inexplicably these turnabouts by James, who and Saul of Tarsus. There's no good explanation for that apart from their own claim they witnessed the risen Christ. Yeah. And the fact that all of these people put their lives on the line for this claim shows that they weren't lying, because nobody will die for a lie they invent themselves. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. If the rule about lying is you always make a lie that makes things better for you.
Yeah.
Doesn't get you tortured, whipped, beaten, stoned, and crucified. You know, that's not a good lie.
Exactly. And I think out of all those stories of transformations, James is my favorite, because that was the brother of Jesus. At one point, he thinks Jesus is crazy. I mean, you just think about it. There's a lot of people who, you know, if they were doing miracles and they claim to be God, you know, I'd probably have to take stop and think. They're doing miracles. What's going on? But if my brother claimed to be God, I would laugh him out of the room, right? Like, what would it take for you to believe your brother was God, come to earth, raised from the dead? And so, I mean, that one's huge for me.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's Maybe that says more about your brother. I don't know.
It totally does.
Jesus had a pretty pure life. You know, John the Baptist said, I should be baptizing you, not you me.
Well, that's true.
And he didn't know at the time that Jesus was the Messiah. It wasn't until afterwards that he got the sign. And so why did he say that? Well, they're cousins, you know. They grew up together. And the godly man, John the Baptist, the great prophet, recognizes the virtue and godliness of the of this cousin of his named Jesus of Nazareth.
Wow, that's great. All right. You know, hey, thanks for spending your time with us today. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate this.
I had a great time with you,
this
fellas.
Has been really awesome. Good. And again, if anyone wants the book, thestoryofreality.com, thestoryofreality.com, and we're going to link to it at truthrevolution.tv. Yep. So if you've ever been to our site before, you can check it out there. This is some really good stuff. thestoryofreality.com. Publisher's Zondervan. It came out last month, so this is going to be good. Sold wherever the ever books are sold, so they can get it on Amazon, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And if they like the book, they can weigh in too. And with I just checked about 75 or 76 people weighed in, and all but 3 or 5 stars.
So all right.
Awesome. That's pretty good. And, so it's being well received. That makes me feel good. And by the way, if you read it and don't like it, you can weigh in too. You know, be honest about it.
No.
You got to read it first and then not like it, you know.
There we go.
So I think you're going to enjoy it. And I think at least get you thinking if you're not a follower of Christ.
There we go. We always tell people that if they love the show, please go and rate it. If they don't, thanks for listening anyway.
Right.
But, all right. Hey, thanks for listening to the show, everybody. TruthRevolution.tv. We'll be back here next week. And again, last time, thestoryofreality.com.